now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day it is. It is Constitution Day, a day when we celebrate our founding charter, our Charter of Liberty, the document drafted so many years ago and then finally signed this day many, many years ago, 1787. That document is under threat, as people acknowledge, as never before. So what is the biggest force threatening, the biggest idea threatening our Constitution? Is it terrorism? Nah. Is it progressivism? Well, kind of, sort of. Is it globalism? You can say a little bit. But Steve Meyer believes, and I must say I agree with him, that the biggest and the deepest threat to our Constitution is actually materialism. Now, by this, we don't necessarily mean enjoying some of the good things in life. Enjoying some of the good things in life is, by most standards, good. But Stephen Meyer is the director of the Center for Science and Culture of Discovery Institute, and this is our Science and Culture Hour. Steve is the author, most recently, of the explosive bestseller, Darwin's Doubt, subtitled The Explosive Origin of Animal Life and the Case for Intelligent Design. He is a philosopher of science with a PhD from Cambridge. Steve, thanks for coming in. Okay, make clear, first of all, when we talk about our Constitution being threatened by materialism, what you mean by materialism.
Well, the Constitution is based on a particular conception of human nature. And the Constitution is under attack today because that conception of human nature is under attack. The framers assumed that human beings, first of all, had free will and were therefore capable of self-governance. They also assumed that we were, because we had free will, we could be held morally accountable for our actions, that we weren't totally determined by environmental forces. Thirdly, they assumed that we had an intrinsic dignity and therefore we had rights that were, as they put it, inalienable because we had been endowed by a creator with those rights. And fourthly, they believed that there was a constancy to morality, that there was an unchanging nature to the basic moral principles and an unchanging human nature that allowed law to be the same one generation after another. And each one of those key tenets that are assumed in the Constitution are now under attack because of what we call scientific materialism, or what scientists or what philosophers and scholars sometimes call scientific naturalism. And by that, we don't mean he who dies with the most toys wins, that form of materialism. We mean this underlying worldview or philosophy that says that life is the product of unguided, undirected processes, such that we aren't the product of a divine creator, but rather a mindless process, and therefore we're totally determined. We don't have free will, and even law and morality are evolving, such that, and this started with the progressives in the 19-teens under Woodrow Wilson, saying that the Constitution, because human nature evolves and even morality evolves, therefore the Constitution must evolve. And so with that kind of a dominant thought form afoot in the culture, It's no surprise that the constitutional protections against concentration of power and the protections of individual liberty are being effaced.
And you know that Hollywood is about to celebrate Woodrow Wilson in a big, new, splashy film biography. Did you hear about this?
I didn't hear that. I just caught up to the one about the 1920, the Great Gatsby, over the weekend.
Correct. Yeah. Well, there's actually something in common between the new Wilson book. Scott Berg, who is going to be a guest on this show tomorrow. A. Scott Berg, who's a fantastic biographer, he's been a biographer of Lindbergh in the past and many others. He's written this new book about Wilson. Hollywood has bought the rights and they have already cast the lead. And the lead is, Jeremy, do you know? It's, you want to guess? Yeah, you think, I mean, Woodrow Wilson, it's Leonardo DiCaprio.
He just played the other
lead. He just played Gatsby, right. So, let's hope he does better than he did as J. Edgar Hoover. It's interesting that Wilson, of course, is associated with this whole movement for scientific materialism, because Wilson himself was such a devoutly religious guy. somebody who prayed every day.
It's true. And also, he was a kind of conflicted guy because he believed in God, but he thought that Darwinism explained everything that was going on around us. And he applied, most importantly, he applied Darwinism to his philosophy of government. And that's where we got, and later this was picked up, the evolving constitution idea was later picked up by Oliver Wendell Holmes. And it's been a staple of, it's been the animating force behind judicial activism ever since, with the idea that the judges basically get to make up the law. There aren't unchanging principles that they have to
refer to. It's when you say there aren't unchanging principles, the one unchanging principle was, since evolution is random and unguided, then our evolving constitution is just going to grow in a natural way, and it's not going to be guided by any overarching intelligence. That's part of the problem with an evolving constitution doctrine, isn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And just that I think it doesn't match reality. I think human beings do have there is a design to human beings. Therefore, there is a stable nature. And the principles articulated in the Constitution did a very good job of protecting those liberties that are important to human flourishing. And when we allow too much power to be concentrated at the center of government, inevitably those liberties are abridged and people are hurt. So,
Stephen, you're a philosopher, but you're also a historian. You also know a great deal about the American founding. Your core principle, and you're making the case that this is actually a core principle of the Republic, that America and our Constitution are based on it, on this Constitution Day. By the way, our phone number is 1-800-955-1776. Do you know of any of the founders, any of the founding generation, who would have denied the idea that there is a guiding intelligence in the universe? And I know some people are going to say Thomas Paine, but he never denied that.
No.
He believed it passionately.
Even the free thinkers who were not explicitly Christian were at least deists, and most of Jefferson is often tagged as a deist. But if you look at the quotes in the Jefferson Memorial, it's obvious that he wasn't a deist. He was a non-religious theist. Deists believe that the Creator only acted at the very beginning. Jefferson feared divine judgment on this country because of slavery.
And he also said the God who gave us life gave us liberty same time.
Exactly. So no, they were all certainly not materialists in the modern sense that we've had over the last 150 years since Darwin, Marx, and Freud in the late 19th century. And that's where the philosophy that's influencing our elite culture has come from. And it's very much at odds with the philosophy that made the Constitution and the protection of liberty that we enjoy possible.
I know that we were together at a Discovery Institute event where I was able to speak to the people who had been gathered from across the country. And one of the points that I made is part of the danger of materialistic thinking you see with this issue of gun control, where the president is back and apparently there's going to now again be a big focus of the Obama administration. The problem with gun control, and you see it related to this terrible, terrible crime yesterday, the shooting in Washington, D.C. The problem with gun control is it focuses on a material solution to what is at its very core a spiritual and moral problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the real focus shouldn't be the tools that evildoers use to do their evil, because they always find a tool. The focus should be on how you stop the evil.
And we hold the gun accountable, but not the person who pulled the trigger. And actually, there's so many instances of this in the culture. There was a murder less publicized than the one yesterday over the weekend. A 17-year-old young man killed a 71-year-old guy in Florida. And the first thing his attorney was doing was exploring the possibility that he was mentally ill, and he said he'd be looking into that as a possible defense.
And that excuse is also materialism. I mean, the ultimate materialism, we had a caller before about Dianne Feinstein, who was there when Harvey Milk and George Moscone, the mayor of San Francisco, were killed. And you may remember the killer had the Twinkie defense. He got a reduced because he had been eating too many Twinkies.
Yeah.
This is the ultimate materialism. You put I don't even know if they make Twinkies anymore, but you put enough of those in your body And then you can literally get away with murder?
Our genes, our environment, and our evolutionary history, or some combination thereof, made us do it. There was the funny Salt and Pepper cartoon, funny but poignant, in the Wall Street Journal a couple years ago. And there's this hapless guy sitting in front of a judge. And he says, not guilty by reason of millions of years of evolutionary selection for aggressive behavior, Your Honor.
Wait, where did this cartoon
appear? It was in the Wall Street Journal, their little Salt and Pepper feature that they have.
That's fantastic. Yeah. We have to post that on our website. We're talking to Dr. Stephen Meyer. He is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Darwin's Doubt. He is also the director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. When we come back in this Science and Culture Hour, if any of you believe that the assumptions of materialism are right or valuable or worth defending or worth advancing, you should give us a call.
1-800. The Michael Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776. That's 1-800-955-1776. MichaelMedved.com.
21 minutes after the hour, and on the Constitution Day, which we're celebrating today, we're speaking with Steve Meyer, Dr. Steve Meyer. Stephen Meyer is the best-selling author of Darwin's Doubt. He is the director of the Center for Science and Culture of Discovery Institute right here in Seattle and across the country and around the world. Discovery is increasingly international. I mean, really, you have operations in Paris, Istanbul, all over the place.
Yep, absolutely. Good people everywhere.
1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. I mentioned before we were talking about this idea of materialism threatening the constitutional principles that we celebrate today. That kind of materialism relates pretty directly to racism, doesn't it?
Well, it has been associated with it, especially in a particular Darwinian form in the 1920s, the eugenics movement. It certainly, there was a particular...
Well, Darwin himself believed in a racial hierarchy.
He did.
Not?
And this didn't come out in The Origin of Species, but it was expressed in The Descent of Man, his second book. And so it's not surprising that... avid Darwinists in the 20s and 30s picked up on that.
And let's see, which race would Darwin place on top?
The one of which he was a member.
what a surprise.
Which would not have surprised the founders, because they also understood that in addition to dignity, human beings can be very self-serving and self-interested. And that was one of the reasons for the separation of powers. They didn't want any one corrupt human being acquiring too much power at the expense of others.
Let's go to Dennis in Philadelphia. Dennis, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Stephen Meyer.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. And it's a pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Meyer. I have a question referring to the race issue. As I recall, President Wilson was the one who played the movie that the Ku Klux Klan used as their recruiting tool. And how does that enter into the Darwinian, the Darwinism and the whole philosophy?
What you're talking about is in 1915, D.W. Griffith did this movie called Birth of a Nation, which is arguably the most successful movie ever in the United States. The highest percentage of Americans saw it. It was a sensation. It was the first big, ambitious, epic, silent film. And you're right. It was a film that glorified the Ku Klux Klan. It was based on a novel called The Klansman. And it was a lot of the black people in the movie were, in fact, played by white actors with burnt cork and or makeup of different kinds. And the blacks in the movie were portrayed as subhuman, as gorilla-like, as animals. And Wilson... It not only played the movie in the White House, but he ordered his cabinet to come see it because he thought it was like writing history with lightning. And he said, and alas, every scene in it is too true. And because Wilson was a Southerner, he had grown up in Virginia and Georgia, and his earliest memories were of his father being on the losing side of the Civil War. So... Stephen, what's the connection between that kind of racism and Wilson resegregated the federal workforce? And what's the connection between racism and materialism?
Well, it's probably more a misapplication of Darwinian theory in this case, the idea that the white race had was more advanced in its evolution than the other races, which was a common idea among the Europeans who first formulated Darwinian evolution. So I'm not sure it's fair to pin that on the theory itself. It's probably a misapplication of the theory. I have other reasons for questioning Darwinism, but it was a very common thing. And of course, the Nazis picked up on that. A lot of their propaganda was very racially based. And if you read Mein Kampf, the Darwinian ideas, the idea of the German state was to advance the experiment in evolution and that they were to help natural selection along was inherent in the Nazi propaganda and in Mein Kampf itself. There's an excellent book, From Darwin to Hitler, by the historian Richard Weikart, who explores these connections.
Let's go to John in Louisville, Kentucky. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Meyer.
Yes. I have a question regarding intelligent design. I understand that intelligent design is primarily a biologically applied item. I wonder why it's not historically applied. And then I would tell you that it cannot possibly be a historic. There cannot possibly be a historical intelligent design, because then.
Well, I'm sorry. What do you mean by a historical?
If the Constitution was part of intelligent design, then it should continually be evolving.
I'm not sure I follow you on that. There's a.
Neither am I. Wait. When you say historical intelligent design, I don't know what you mean.
What is the idea of intelligent design biologically?
Well, that there are certain features of the biological organisms that are best explained by a purposive intelligence rather than purely undirected material forces.
Let me mention one thing about this. There was a big story in the newspapers this weekend, and Steve, I'm sure you saw it, about little tiny insects that have gears in their legs. And they are mechanical gears. They're exactly like the kind of gears that human beings invent. And the idea would be it's kind of strange to think that those gears that are very fine and perfectly designed would have been developed randomly. It's much easier to believe and more logical and more scientific to believe that they would have been designed.
I would say that it's much easier to believe that it's random evolution than to say that there's some design behind it. It's like history. History evolves by its own mechanism. There is no intelligent design. So, you know, and I can't understand your argument that we should stop doing anything to the Constitution if it's part of intelligent design.
Well, you're mixing up a bunch of things, good sir. If you want to find out about the argument, the scientific argument for intelligent design, I'd recommend that you have a look at some of the books that I and my colleagues have produced. And most recently, I've written a book, Darwin's Doubt, that lays out the case for intelligent design. We're finding inside cells, not only gears in the structure of animal legs, but we're finding inside cells, miniature machines, digital code, complex information processing systems, things that we know from our experience, from our uniform and repeated experience, which is the basis of all scientific reasoning, always come from an intelligence, from a mind, not a material process.
And by the way, the idea that there was some very high intelligence and great wisdom behind the design of the Constitution of the United States is, I think, almost all Americans would agree. Thing is brilliantly designed. That doesn't mean it's perfect.
Well, and also the founders believed there was an intelligent designer, a creator for human beings. And it was on that basis that they affirmed that we had inalienable rights. There's a piece up on Michael's website on our Science and Culture update page that I wrote a couple years ago in the Boston Globe explaining how Jefferson believed that the evidence in his day pointed by reason to a designing intelligence behind the creation of man. And for that reason, he thought we had intrinsic dignity. If you lose that concept of man, you lose the basis of the constitutional system.
When we come back with Stephen Meyer, we'll talk about some other issues beyond gun control, where materialism and the values of the Constitution come into dramatic conflict. Coming up. Four minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, where you don't have to be a materialist or a non-materialist to believe that it's a virtuous thing to feed hungry children. Why? Because it gives them some chance when they survive for for making something of themselves, for having a life, for living the kind of dreams that every American cherishes. Right now, there are literally tens of thousands of kids in the mountains of Guatemala, which is one of the 17 countries that where Food for the Poor works. There are kids in Guatemala who are going to have a year of life and nourishment because of you. Because you choose to give $44 a year. It covers an entire year, 365 days, two meals a day. It's an amazing thing. You can do this. $44, Food for the Poor, 855-330-4673. That's 855-330-HOPE, Food for the Poor. We're talking about materialism versus the Constitution with Dr. Stephen Meyer of Discovery Institute. Let's go directly to Kurt in Greenville, South Carolina. Kurt, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Steve Meyer.
Hello, this is Kurt Heitman. Thank you for taking my call and pleasure to talk with Dr. Meyer. I just want to make the comment that I'm a physician steeped in evolutionary education. And I just finished Darwin's Doubt and also Signature in the Cell. And I was very impressed with the argument that you make that intelligent design is just as much a science in the historical sense as is neo-Darwinism or any of the other evolutionary theory. And I like to make that comment because it certainly, to me, strips away a lot of the arguments against intelligent design being a religion.
Well, thank you. The case I make, of course, is that the case for intelligent design is based on scientific evidence, and it's also based on a standard method of scientific reasoning. In fact, the very method of reasoning that Darwin used, called the method of inference to the best explanation. So it has every claim to be a scientific theory. I was curious, or noted, that you were a physician. There's been some polling done recently showing that about 60% of U.S. physicians are skeptical about neo-Darwinism, and I guess it's not hard to see why, given the complexity of the systems that you guys work with every day. So I appreciate your comment.
Kurt, thanks for listening to the show, and thanks for calling us, and Godspeed in your good work. Let's go to Tim in Seattle. Tim, you're on the Medved Show with Stephen Meyer.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, and it's an honor to talk to both of you. Let me make the case, my case, as briefly as I can, and I will state that because the dominant worldview is indeed scientific naturalism or materialism, the argument is that, therefore, the Constitution cannot stand up. And I'll make the point this. Another way of stating materialism is worshiping the creation. Although that's kind of putting words in the materialist mouth, because they don't believe in the creation, because they don't believe in the creator. That's,
well, they don't believe in worshiping anything except for state power. Stephen Meyer?
Well, I think the caller makes a very good point, and it's an old one in conservative circles, that ideas have consequences. And what we're doing on this show today is not looking at so much the merits of intelligent design, but why the debate about intelligent design and Darwinism matters. And there are many, many cultural consequences of the materialistic worldview that Darwinism sponsors, but one of which is that it denies the basic conception of human nature that's presupposed in the Constitution, a document which has ensured for many of us an unprecedented liberty.
Well, when we talk about unprecedented liberty, we were speaking before about the consequences of materialism. One of the other consequences of materialism is if you believe that materialism is the basis for human life, then all problems have a materialistic solution, including the problem of poverty.
Poverty is a great example, Michael. You gave a terrific talk on this summer, actually, at our conference, and that was one of your examples, is that, you know, the welfare state that was established in the 60s was basically a food over the fence model of poverty.
Really. Yeah, all you need to do is give poor people a nice place to live and enough to eat, and everything will be fine. The problem with poverty is much, much deeper, unfortunately, than that. And you see this right now, even in St. Louis, they're tearing down 100-year-old housing projects. Mm-hmm. And the idea of building housing projects, slum clearance, ignores the fact that slums are deeper than bricks and mortar.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, I love to hear you give these examples, because so many people think this debate about our origins, the debate between Darwinism and intelligent design, is kind of an isolated scientific topic that doesn't affect everything else. And in fact, because Darwinism has been the foundation of this materialistic view, it affects everything else.
Right. If we're just like animals in a zoo, then what you need to do to make the animals more comfortable is just upgrade the cages. The founders had a different idea. However, Piers Morgan has his own idea for amending the Constitution. Wait till you hear it coming up.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
44 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, and it's probably not an intelligent design on this desk right now, even though I'm speaking to Stephen Meyer, because I have this stack of papers is too much. It's just too big. This needs to be cleaned out. We need a big bang here. But in any event, and what happened is the papers were covering the button that I have to push so I can come in and say it's 44 minutes after the hour. Now almost 45 minutes after the hour. Okay, I teased right before the break, Stephen, the brilliant suggestion by Piers Morgan. And you know how Piers Morgan on CNN, I'm speaking to Stephen Meyer of Discovery Institute, how Piers Morgan of CNN feels about guns.
He's against them.
Yeah, he feels about guns kind of the way that Dracula feels about a cross. I mean, or garlic, I guess. He just turns the other way and hates them. So he tweeted, and this is even before he of course has gone crazy with the latest shooting in Washington D.C. But he tweeted, "Why not an amendment to the Constitution guaranteeing everyone's right not to get shot with a gun? Good idea."
Well, it's a little like Roosevelt's right not to be poor. You know, it's it to require something like that requires so much government that we'll end up not having any liberty.
Well, yes, the right not to get shot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's how about a right not to suffer from traffic accidents, which still claim more people than guns do.
We do have appropriate laws holding murderers accountable for their actions, but increasingly the problem is that we don't hold murderers accountable for their actions, because once the crime is committed, they are excused on the basis of these diminished responsibility pleas, which are a form of materialistic thinking applied to jurisprudence.
I'll tell you how bad it is. We had this stabbing here in Seattle with a killer named Donnell Jackson, who had just arrived in our city from California, and the police report says that as he stood over his victim, who he had stabbed to death, and his other victim, who is still in serious condition, who he had stabbed, he's standing there with a knife, and the police report says he obviously suffered from diminished capacity, mm-hmm. which of course makes it all the more difficult to get the appropriate sentence. And some of us actually believe that the appropriate sentence would deprive Mr. Jackson of his life. Let us go to Steve in Chicago. Steve, you're on the Michael Medved Show with another Steve, Stephen Meyer.
Mr. Meyer, I want to congratulate you on you offer this world an incredible book. My question simply is, I'm still looking for the connection between intelligent design and the validity of there being a God as we're brought up or as we read in the Bibles.
Right. The theory of intelligent design makes an argument for the activity of a purposive intelligence of some kind to explain the features of living systems that we see. And it does so using a standard method of scientific reasoning that says that we should be looking for causes that are now in operation, that we know from our present experience to explain events in the remote past. Well, we know of the activity of minds from our own experience, so we can go as far as affirming the activity of a mind of some kind using that scientific method. To go beyond that, we need to deliberate in a more philosophical way. But the door is opened. I think the theory of intelligent design has theistic-friendly implications, because obviously we weren't the creators of life, and it suggests that and we also see evidence of design built into the fabric of the universe from the very beginning, which I think suggests that we're looking at a transcendent form of intelligence, which is very much in the same profile as what believers call God.
Let's go to Nadav in New Brunswick, New Jersey. You're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hi, Steve. I was convinced by Michael Behe's books about design way back, it took your books to convince me that it was empirical and testable science. You did a great job with that.
Thank you
very much. I was thinking about methodological naturalism, and it's a very heuristically fruitful convention in science, just like uniformitarianism was, that was invented by Lyell. And I was thinking about how Alvarez with his dinosaur comet theory, he overturned it in favor of catastrophism, which they were pretty opposed to. So I think in the same way, I would definitely support overturning naturalism for what the evidence supports right now.
Nadav, are you by any chance in graduate school?
No, I'm 17.
Oh,
we have a summer program for bright guys like you.
Listen, yeah. this is pretty highfalutin for talk radio, and good for you. Stay on the line. We'll get a response from Stephen Meyer coming up to a 17-year-old who speaks authoritatively about catastrophism. We'll be right back.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
55 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show with Stephen Meyer, author of the bestseller Darwin's Doubt. He's the director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute, this Science and Culture Hour of the Medved Show. Stephen, response to Nadav, who's been largely persuaded by your book.
I'm impressed with his thoughtful question. He was asking about something called methodological naturalism, which translated means the idea that if you're a scientist, you've got to limit yourself to strictly materialistic explanations for everything. And we are challenging that principle on the grounds that there are some things that are not best explained by mindless processes, but by reference to intelligence. If you walk into the British Museum and look at the Rosetta Stone and see all those inscriptions, you wouldn't want to say, boy, isn't it wonderful what wind and erosion produced. You'd immediately recognize those inscriptions because they are information-bearing as the product of intelligence. And so I'm glad that Nadav has got the force of that argument that it isn't it's anti-intellectual to limit ourselves to strictly materialistic explanations. There are some things that are better explained by design.
We were talking before about some of the dangers of materialism being seen in this diminished capacity defense, the idea that somehow people are not responsible as moral actors for the decisions they make. It all has to do with their genes or their upbringing or psychology.
Or their evolutionary history, actually.
And where does that start?
Well, it started back in 1924. There was a case in Chicago. Alfred Hitchcock later made famous as the Thriller murder case. It was a case of two young men, Leopold and Loeb. They were students at the University of Chicago. Their professor had been teaching Nietzschean philosophy and the idea that morality is an illusion of the elites can avoid. They killed a 12-year-old boy for the thrill of it. They were convicted. And at point of sentencing, the ACLU sent out Clarence Darrow to defend them. And he said he wanted to get them off of the death penalty. He argued for clemency on the basis of their diminished responsibility. And at one point he said, is Dickie Loeb to blame because of the forces that were at work producing him long before he was born? He said, of course he has defective moral machinery, but his moral machinery was produced by the unguided, undirected evolutionary process, and therefore he wasn't responsible.
He used those terms, yeah. Unguided, yeah. Undirected evolutionary process?
Close to it, yeah, absolutely.
And unbelievable.
And so this was the salt and pepper cartoon was actually parodying a real defense, and the first diminished responsibility plea in our jurisprudence history was this plea made by Clarence Darrow by making an appeal to the evolutionary history of two young murderers, saying that they weren't responsible because they'd been programmed by evolution to do what they'd
and
done.
And it's so interesting when you look back on it, because there are very few cases where the evil is more conscious or more manifest than they're killing. I think the kid's name was Frank, so they killed.
12-year-old kid.
Yeah, yeah. And it's and the idea that this is the basis, to some extent, for the legal evolution of what has become known as the insanity defense. Nothing but sanity, though, from Discovery Institute and the Center for Science and Culture, and particularly from Stephen Meyer. Great for you to come in, Stephen. We will be seeing you soon and continue uplifting and enlightening this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.